The place to be is living free. Living free in Tennessee.
Welcome to Living Free in Tennessee, where we talk about building the life you choose on your terms. Today is Tuesday, March 10th, 2026, and this is episode 1124 of Living Free in Tennessee. And I'm a little late today. I rolled the four-wheeler, and I do have a rotator cuff injury now, and Jenny was putting a patchy thing on it. So hopefully that'll work a little bit. It's not a bad injury, but I jumped clear of the roll and landed on the shoulder. I tucked and rolled. Anyway, that's just what happened today. So I was actually going to start fairly on time, and then I was like, now I'm covered in mud. I'm still covered in mud. This is what homestead life is like sometimes, you know? Anyway, we're going to talk about lessons learned after four or five seasons of birthing sheep. We're in the middle of lamb birthing season right now at the Holler Homestead. And I also want to cover our usual Tuesday segments like Tales from the Prepper Pantry, Seasonal Forage, or whatever. I actually did not prepare a Seasonal Forage segment, so you guys are SOL on that one until Friday when we do Homestead Happenings. So hopefully the audio is working great today. Before we jump into that, I want to talk about our featured event of today's show, and that is the Refuge Ruckus, which is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this week in Oklahoma. I believe it's Oklahoma. They're near a border, so, but I'm pretty sure it's Oklahoma. Anyway, it's out that direction, and there are only 50 tickets left. You can get that at refugeruckus.com. The proceeds from that event go to benefit children who've been rescued from being trafficked. So definitely worth the investment. Only 50 tickets left, and I noticed they have a digital pass. So if you can't get on the road and get out there, you can get a digital pass and participate from afar. So there you go. I also want to thank two sponsors today. The first one is agoristtaxadvice.com/LFTN. That's the whole URL you use. You can go there and it'll ask for your email, and then you get an email with some links of resources that you definitely want to download and check out. It's a guide to setting up your finances. Well, not setting them up, but you know, things to keep in mind that you should be tracking and how to track them to take advantage of tax code, which is something he specializes in. He can look at your finances if he thinks he can help you save money and figure out the best structure with you so that you are able to keep more of your money in your pocket. agoristtaxadvice.com/LFTN. Our second sponsor today helps you with digital privacy, something I have nothing of. That's right. You're seeing a Fitbit on my arm right now. That thing talks to something in the cloud. I actually am wearing this to monitor heart stuff at this time, and it's been super helpful. So that is not private, right? When you're putting stuff in the cloud. However, you could do something like get an above phone and keep as much of your information as private as possible. And I love working with above phone because when you buy the phone, they give you free consulting to help you figure out how to set it all up, because you'll be learning a different operating system. Abovephone.com. There's a link in the notes as well if you want to use my affiliate link, which tells them that you came there from here, which, you know, helps our relationship, if you know what I mean. Coupon code LIVEFREETN for $50 off. With that, it's time for our first segment, Tales from the Prepper Pantry. But I'm actually going to ask Tactical a question. Did I break it? Tactical? That's the real question everybody wants to know. Nothing appears to be broken. Yeah. So. Oh, did you do that without? I realized I shouldn't use my adrenaline powered person to put it right side up after talking to you.
I've done that.
Yeah, I know. I have a rotator cuff injury now. So, and I didn't realize I had it until I got back here and the adrenaline like fell out of my system. But everybody knows I rolled a four-wheeler. So, yeah. What? You look amused. Why are you amused? You want to turn the mic on and join my show for a second, and we'll get into the show. I don't have another live or another recording until 4. So, yeah. I sent him a picture. I'm like, I'm okay, but I rolled the four-wheeler. Here, let me see. What you have to do to turn these on is hold it like this until you see the blue. Do that. Now it's working. There you go. Yeah. Patrick's like, oh, no, I didn't know. Patrick, that's why I started the show late, is because I rolled the four-wheeler, but I wasn't going very fast when it happened, and I was able to get out of the way. So it was actually super lucky.
I could tell you weren't going fast, and I could see exactly how that happened to you.
Yeah. How it happened. Did I cut the front, corner too?
Front left wheel went up that
oh, yeah.
fence.
Yeah, because I couldn't stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I knew how it happened while it was happening.
I can tell without you telling me.
Yeah, but I already told you what happened.
Well, you said you rolled it, and you said you couldn't stop, and you hit the fence, but that was about it.
Yeah.
Once I got there.
The four-wheeler tried to climb the fence. Is that Cece?
Yes.
Okay, Cece needs to go home.
It appears that you successfully climbed the fence.
I only went up about 2 feet before it rolled, and I was like, oh, no, this is happening. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to jump that way.
Yeah, that's when you just step off and let it go.
Oh, it wasn't a step. It was a jump, but yeah.
What? I have rolled one at the top because yeah. I found a rock.
Yeah.
And that was literally a step off.
Yeah.
That was also a... Once it started, I saw it coming.
Well, I'm really glad I put that milk crate on the back because I actually think that helped me stay out of the way, because it was all the way on its back, by the way.
Oh.
And I pushed it back so I could get my phone out from under the feed scoop that it was resting on.
Oh, one of the feed scoops did break.
I broke the feed scoop.
The crate probably broke.
It has some cracks. Yeah, I noticed. I was like, I'm just not even, whatever. I'm not hurt. So, you know, yeah. But I'm not going to CrossFit on Thursday because I'm pretty sure pull-ups and push-ups are out of the question for a bit.
Yeah.
So, anyway, yes, that was our... So things happen on the homestead, right? But one of the things that happens is lamb birthing. So I'll be talking about that. Do you have any other comments before we move on? Okay. I don't know. Okay. You're just smart. You look happy I rolled the four-wheeler.
I'm not happy. I'm happy that nothing is broken, including mostly you.
Yeah. Well, I told you, hey, I'm not hurt, but I just rode the foot out. It's like, you just start with I'm not hurt.
Yeah. But
I have more aches and pains than when I got hit by the car, though, and totaled my car.
Mm.
So, for what that's worth.
You didn't bail out of your car, so.
I didn't. I just bumped my head on the window. It almost makes me want to get a Chevy Tahoe again, because that thing was a tank. So, yeah. Daytime Emmy goes to Nicole. Yeah. Okay. It's just one of the people listening to the audio podcast are going to be like, dang, I missed the live stream. I could upload the picture with my phone and show it to them, but I would need somebody to hand me my phone from wherever it ended up, which is probably, yeah, it's over there. I could telegram that to myself. That was, oh no, I have it on Telegram. You don't need to do that. Check it out, guys. If you haven't seen this, this is what happened. I'm probably going to hear from somebody about liability when people get hurt, but that was just my bad. Oh, now I can't. Okay. So one time I was riding a skateboard and I was on a quarter pipe. This was in college, and the skateboard got caught on a nail. And so the skateboard just like stopped, and I'm coming down, you know, the quarter pipe, and I kept going, and I, same thing, just like head over heel. And I actually got my left shoulder, and it took me like 8 years to get over that because I kept using it. So yeah. Have people started yelling at you about wearing a helmet? No. I mean, the issue is my shoulder, not my head, but yeah, that would have been bad if I would have hit my head. That would suck. Does anybody wear helmets on four-wheelers, though? Is that a thing?
Probably.
Yeah. I was going really slow, but it just was not stopping. One of the issues that happened is I clenched my hand when I realized what was about to happen, and there's a throttle on the thumb. Yes, I did a little bit. Not bad, but that didn't help. That made it... I knew immediately... I was like, whoops, I shouldn't have clenched my hand. Anyway, This show is actually supposed to be about sheep today, though. But before we do that, I want to talk about Tales from the Prepper Pantry, where we talk about storing what you use and using what you store. And right now, so last night, how'd you like that beef stew, Tactical? It was good. Do you still have a mic on? Okay. So I did a canning course, I don't know, it was like back in 2000 and, uh-oh, that was a mistake. It was back in 2022, I believe, or 23. And I did it for John Bush, and I ended up making a bunch of canned beef. I was showing people how to can beef so you can like source it while it's still inexpensive, can it, and then use it. And then you don't have to use all the refrigeration and freezing, which you can also do with your beef, right? So I did that. And as part of the webinar, I was actually canning the beef while we rent. Like I could be doing that now in this kitchen, but we're not doing that now in this kitchen. And it was super cool. And then I didn't use the beef. So I looked at that and I was like, that's been in my pantry for more than 2 years because it's like an easy meal to just dump that into a pot and make it into beef stew. And finally, yesterday, I was like, you know what? It's time to use it up. So I took all the beef that I can, put it in a pot with potatoes, onions, carrots, some spices, and some, I had some hand bone broth that I had made. And we had really good beefy porky stew last night. And I did it in the Instapot, so I just hit like pressure cook for, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes and then turned it to slow cook because I'm gone on Monday nights. I go to CrossFit and then I go to choir, so I wasn't going to be here to serve dinner to anybody. And then we had a visitor arriving at base camp today, so I wanted, or last night, so I wanted to make sure she had access to something to eat after driving here. And basically what I did was have that ready to go. And it turned out pretty good. I haven't actually tasted it yet, but the feedback was positive on that one. And that's just, you know, like you can cook from the pantry too. And sometimes you do need to think about what am I using up? Because I probably will can some more beef to have on hand. I actually, from a meat standpoint, prefer to have canned chicken with the bone in because it makes really good chicken soup. So when it gets a cold or something and we make them chicken soup, having it already canned and, you know, gone through the pressure canning process has really extracted a lot of the flavor and the nutrients from the bones. So I'll take that, throw it in a pot, throw other things in there to go with the chicken soup, and then it's done in, you know, 15, 20 minutes versus spending all day making a homemade chicken soup. So, but anyway, we got that used up. I'll be harvesting our first lettuce of the season that's grown outdoors this week. It's going to be the little baby leaves, but we've transplanted the stuff I started inside, but I also just direct sowed the lettuce and it's taken off really well. We got this seed from Dr. Mitchell, who we use as our pasture veterinarian. She's retired now, but she still helps me from time to time when she can. I'm looking for another veterinarian who can, you know, who's like regularly doing house calls. And she ended up, you know, saying, hey, I got this really good lettuce last year. And she gave Tactical like 4 plants when he was out there for what I don't remember. I think he was picking up something from her, but she sent us 4 plants and a bunch of seed. And then I collected the seed off the plants. And this lettuce does really well in warm, you know, like hot weather, which we have here. So it takes a long, long time to bolt and it tastes good. Like it remains, it retains its more like lettucey buttery flavor versus getting the bittery old lettuce flavor. So I was really hoping when I saved the seed that it had, you know, it had the pollination had happened properly. And it did because I just tossed it everywhere and it's up. I've even got carrots germinating now, but I'm actually, you know, from a pantry standpoint, it's really fun to start getting those spring fresh vegetables at this time of year, because if you have been adhering strictly to everything you're eating is from your homestead and you don't have strategies in place to extend grow time, you've just gone through a period of dried and canned vegetables or frozen vegetables rather than fresh vegetables. We've been augmenting fresh vegetables from the store just because I can, but I do really, like, I prefer to get the stuff that we grow here and use it. Last year, I think we ate like 40,000 pounds of canned green beans, but that's a whole different story. I've got 3 eyes of round to cut up, which apparently I'm now going to need help with because my right arm is not writing. And they are defrosted and ready to go. As part of that, I put one of my Yolink probes in the outdoor event fridge and learned that it no longer works. It worked great to defrost these because they kept it around 32, 33 degrees. But the temperature started rising today and it went over what I thought it should be at. So, and I had it in there, like it was yelling at me right before the show. And I went over and turned my combination freezer fridge into a fridge, took everything out of it that was frozen, and put the eyes of round in there so that they can stay below 40 degrees. Because I want them below 40 degrees. In fact, I want them probably around 33 degrees when I cut them so that they're easier to cut. So that's something that's got to happen today or tomorrow. And then I'm going to start some of the cuts from the eye of round. I'm going to use to make basterma, which is a cured, and it's sort of like a cured slash fermented meat for the spring workshop, because we're going to want that to serve to people for a charcuterie. Jack and I are doing this really cool session where we do pairings of different flavors of things, like a piece of basterma and some cheese on a cracker, or a you know, what's that called? Cucumber slice. And then how, if you change the order of how they are on there, it will taste different. So there's going to be that tasting on my anniversary celebration night dinner, where we also have a full roast lamb for dinner. So you guys are going to be stuffed who are coming to that. Anyway, we're giving all the storage here a big facelift. So my friend Opalyn's in town and she's helping us re-envision slash set up the storage systems here, among other things, because after all of the construction I've done at my house, plus some things we have here going on at base camp, I am needing to redo that. And part of it is that I've, like, at my household, we've changed dramatically what we use. At base camp, we've changed dramatically what we use. And then also, the things I need at my house are different, and then the places to store them are different. And so it's just a matter of, with 2 households going on, I can have long-term storage not in my prepper pantry. I can have it here, but then there has to be an integrated means where we reorder things on a schedule. So that's I'll give reports on that as it develops. And yeah. Anyway, next up, we have a frugality tip from me today. Sorry, Margo, I have some in the bag from you, but this one came up as I was in the parking lot yesterday, having just worked out. And then my next thing was choir after that. Well, I have a gap of time in there. And what I've done traditionally in the past, because you want to eat dinner before you do that, or I do at least, is I, you know, like I'll hit somewhere and grab something fast, like some Chinese food or whatever. And finally, I got to this thing where I'm like, how much money am I spending on, you know, reasonable but not great Chinese food? And it's not necessarily the best, like, it's not like going to a Chinese food restaurant where you make to order. And it's, this is something I really miss since moving to Tennessee, is going to a real Chinese restaurant and not just the all-you-can-eat buffet or like the super fast, I don't know, you know what I'm talking about, right? Like in the old days, I used to go to a Chinese food restaurant, get a menu and order something off the menu. And then we would share it family style. And that stuff was cooked to order, most of it. And it was really good. Those were the kind of restaurants that would have dim sum on Sunday morning, which is also delicious. So, you know, that's the kind of thing I miss. Well, you know, close to that is there's a couple places in Cookville that I like. There's one place in particular that I go to, and I get it done before choir so I can eat quickly. It has a whole bunch of different things, you know, that can fit just about any dietary need that you have. And I started calculating what that costs me every week. And it's not a ton of money, but it's like 15, 16 bucks every week. And then I started looking at my freeze-dried food that I've been making and realize I can have healthier food that is going to be better on my digestive system and all I got to do is bring boiled water. So I started making freeze-dried meals in the parking lot after CrossFit, eating them, and then going to choir, which I'm sure looks really entertaining to everybody coming out of that gym, because I'm always sitting there like in my Subaru with my Birkenstocks on, making meals out of the back of my car. I wonder why men don't ask me out. That's probably why. But the other thing I realized is I can just take fresh made soup in a thermos, like old lunchbox style. And where this has been a challenge for me is in the old days, I would have just brought a sandwich, but I'm not eating bread anymore. Right. So, so I was like, oh, I could spend money on a thermos and like eat soup out of my thermos or whatever. So moving to that can really bring your weekly food, like your unintentional sort of not fast food, but fat, you know, maybe you are eating fast food. So those unintentional or untracked fast food expenditures add up faster than you know, and they're not super healthy for you. So it's a great way to think about like, what am I doing every week that's a habit that lands me in a situation where I'm spending money that I wouldn't necessarily normally spend. Now, if it's like your thing you do that you like to go out to the place, that's a different thing. But if you can be more strategic about that, that starts adding up over time. And when you get control of that, you get control of a lot of other things. That's why financial advisors will start hitting on like the avocado toast thing or the Starbucks coffee. It's not the $3, which is now an $8 coffee that you spent per se. It's the habit without it being necessarily something that's bringing value to your life, right? So that's the deal. Anyway, what do we got here? Oh, no, you guys are talking about weather. I hear it's snowing some places. Here, it was 84 this weekend. We're getting down below freezing on Thursday, though. That's probably when the next wave of sheep are going to come. Hopefully, I don't have to pull a lamb now that I hurt my shoulder. Sheesh. Anyway, this patch that Jenny has on me does burn a little bit. That's kind of cool. She has some. So this is the cool thing about Base Camp Lodge is it's, you know, it's the community we're building here. So by the way, while we're streaming from here, it's not impossible that somebody would not walk through here. That's why Tactical walked up here. But also he needed to look amused at me about me rolling a four-wheeler. It's kind of fun because you have some community activity going on here, but also, you know, Jenny's here doing, you know, recommendations for like calming teas after you roll your four-wheeler or whatever. But she had these patches she could put on here for anti-inflammation. I'll ice the shoulder later. Having that sort of healing approach is really nice. That's one of the things I'm excited about this project is, you know, just learning together things we can do to make ourselves healthier, you know, mentally, physically, and all the other ways that we can nutritionally. It's just kind of fun. So that's why I've started broadcasting from here, because I'm supposed to tell you guys about this place. So some of you come here from time to time. If you want to come learn how to make bacon, we're doing that Saturday morning, 10 a.m. Tickets are at livingfreeintennessee.com. There are three left. So if you want one, get it soon. You will go home with some of your own bacon. Okay, next up we have Operation Independence, where we talk about building local ongoing revenue into our lives. And I should be telling you about the lambs we've had. We've had four lambs, so that's bringing actual, like, that brings some good money in because we sell them for meat later, or we sell them as breeding pairs. But actually, these three rounds of beef, I have rounds that I got from the butcher from our cow. Yeah, no, you're wondering how a cow has three butt cheeks. It's because we have a cow and a half here, really. So that's saving me a lot in butcher fees and letting me have specific cuts that I want. And I keep more of the meat because there's less waste, which was part of why I asked him to do it that way. And then we can fold that, like, so that's part of how we're able to provide really tasty meals at the with really good ingredients at the spring workshop is I work really hard to get sort of the from scratch things. It takes time, though, and it keeps my expenditures down. And I think learning some basics on how to cut meat is a really good skill to have just from a it's satisfying. You get exactly what you want. You learn more about the cuts of meat. And part of that is you learn how to cook them better. And that makes your whole life better. It does also make it that when you go to a steakhouse, you may not like what you get anymore because you can do it better at home. But you know, all of those things are great. And that's, you know, Operation Independence is about keeping more of your money in your pocket by not paying a guy to do a thing unless you have decided it's better to pay the guy to do the thing. But also it's about developing local ongoing revenue here. But this time, that's all I was thinking about. It's like those three eyes of round that I didn't have to be pay to be, you know, ground up, put into steaks and roasts and all those things. Plus, the way I'm cutting them are not ways that you usually get it from the butcher, although you can. And it's allowing me to make some cured meats, which what I've realized here is producing more cheese and more cured meats on this homestead is important for the eating habits of our community. So I've really been doubling down on that. And then also this year, something I'm really excited about, which will bring local revenue in here, is that I am allowed to make and sell cheese in Tennessee. Like, I can't like ship it over borders or something, as long as I have specific labeling on that about it being prepared in a home kitchen and I have to use pasteurized milk. But that means that opens me up for some of these cheeses I show you how to make. I can also sell under the Holler Homestead brand as long as it's direct to consumer. So that's actually going to expand part of what we're doing here. So funny, I got an email from somebody talking about when you talk about what you do, Nicole, you make me tired. I'm like, I make me tired too, dude. I'm going to answer that email, but I haven't yet. And no, you didn't offend me in case you're listening to this. Okay. It was in response to my Monday mail, because my Monday mail was like about some things I've learned about when you're going through life transitional stuff related to my three things and productivity that's going to result in one more chapter in that book than is already there. So that's another lesson for another time. I know the real reason you came here was to see if I survived the rolling of the four-wheeler, right, guys? Right? Oh, kava, passion flower, and chamomile too. Yeah, I have some passion flower and chamomile at my house. I don't know if I have any kava, but I think there will be talking about what I'm drinking. This is the tea blend that Jenny always has here at Base Camp Lodge. It's just out for anybody to make. And it's, what's it called? It's called Morning Meadow. It's really good. It's got some dandelion in it. I think I taste lemony something, so maybe lemon balm. I'm not sure. Oh, you know, if only there was an ingredients list. So this has nettle, dandelion root, peppermint, and lemon powder. Oh, it's lemon powder. So I think she makes that from either freeze-dried lemon or I don't think it's zest. I think it's freeze-dried lemon. So, which I made a bunch of that the other day. So we have a freeze dryer here. Anyway, this is really good and it's soothing and it's not got any caffeine in it, which we all know I shouldn't be adding caffeine right now. It might be tempting to add something pain-killing though. So we'll see about that later. Anyway, so the main topic today is really lessons learned from 5 years of raising sheep. So there you go. I know you guys were excited to learn about this. Last year, I had a whole episode on pulling the one lamb from Stormy that was really hard to pull, but did happen. But I thought I'd step back on this because we've never done a bigger picture discussion of raising sheep in the way I want to talk about it today. So a lot of people, like, I have a lamb that may turn into a bottle lamb right now because there was some trauma during birth related to the sheep being attacked. And so her milk's been a little weird. And then she also got an infection related to being attacked. And so her milk got a little, you know, so we've been augmenting with some stuff. And one of the lambs, one of the twins, is much more interested in the bottle than mom. I think because the milk comes out a little faster in the bottle. I think that's like she just got used to it. The other one has been all about mom, but will take the bottle when needed. And I think as a result of that, I probably can convince this lamb to go back on mom. But also there's somebody in our network interested in a pair of bottle lambs to see if they like raising sheep with the intention of processing them. And both of these babies are intended for meat. They're not intended for or breeding pairs, but obviously, I can't send a brother and sister for breeding pair. So I was thinking about all of that and our management practices, because we're bringing another ram in from Carrie Brown, who raises sheep the same way we do. And part of why we're doing that is we want strong genetics, but I also didn't want to bring a ram in that wasn't raised this way. I had one other opportunity for a ram last year and lost the email, and we weren't quite ready for it anyway. So, but you know, getting our network trading rams is actually a really good idea. In fact, somebody else reached out to me recently about trading a ram with their ram, and I need to talk to the tactical, and I need to consider what the timeline for Rammy is, if he's going to stay here or if he's going to go on to other pastures, which would not be terrible for, he's such a good ram though. The problem is his disposition is perfect for a ram that you want to have. But I thought, well, let's step back and talk about, if you're interested in sheep, how do you get, like, how do you make the decision of that one? And I think it starts with, why do you want sheep? Do you want them to keep your grass mown? Do you want them for food stability? Do you want them to have access to high quality, rotationally grain grass, raised grass-fed meats, which gives you a different nutritional makeup than lamb from the store? Like, why are you doing it? And then you need to make management decisions about, how much time do I have to deal with this? How much time do I have to rotate them? How much time do I have to care for them? How much land do I have? What's the quality of my pasture? Those sorts of questions. And you need to start making management decisions about sheep, because many of us are here because we're in the permaculture world. And the best way to do this is move them every day, rotationally graze them, all of those things. Follow them with chickens or whatever. Like, there's a whole thing you can do to improve the quality of your land and use your ruminants as part of the system and its function stacking and all of those things. And that's what we all aspire to. Some of us also work a job or two. And so sometimes what we aspire to do is not reasonable within the confines of what our personal time allows us to do. I bring this up to give you permission, if you are going to raise sheep, to raise them however you want to. And if the way I raise them is not how you want to, you're still getting a better meat product than you are likely getting in a mass-produced store product. And if that's what you're trying to do, good on you. It's just like growing vegetables at home and using Miracle-Gro is probably going to give you a better thing than what you're buying at the store. Even though that's not organic, it's mined minerals, all of those things. It's not helping your soil microbiology. And there's so many things you will learn as you garden that can make it better. But start by growing some lettuce or some herbs or a tomato plant, which are harder than you think. start by doing something for yourself and learn a skill, and then start adding skills. That's the same with sheep. When we went into it, we decided, like, did we want to do rotational grazing or a single paddock? A friend of mine around the corner managed her sheep on a single paddock. It was a big, like, 1 acre fenced area with a lean-to. The lean-to was near their house, so they could go there and add supplemental hay and grain to feed them. And then they had the pasture, like, just free run of the pasture to graze. And it was big enough that it was not a mud lot, and it was not so overgrazed that all they had was perilla. I'm pretty sure they ran a bush hog through there from time to time. I'm not even sure. Like, the sheep kept it pretty eaten down. And unlike my goat pasture that is set up that way, which does get perilla, it's not overgrazed. So I think part of that's because of the supplementing they do, but also the density and the size of the paddock. So that's another way to manage it. And so the time investment with having that is to set up the original fenced area, put your sheep in there, and then once a day, make sure they have food and water. And then when lambs come, do lamby things. And when it's time to butcher, do butchery things, and you're done. And that time investment's different than what we decided to do, which is rotational grazing, which requires to set up braided wire to rotate them all the time. A lot of people move mobile shelters with that. You have to move the water. You have to make sure they have access to water. So if you don't have a watering set of troughs set up like they do at Polyface, you have to move the actual vessel that the water is in. Because ours are out on the pasture, we have livestock guardian dogs with them because coyotes could come and just like blow right through the electric fence if they wanted to. And then they would see our canines and be unhappy. I do have actual proof that those canines can bite this week. So that's a very different scale. And if you have flat pasture you can rotate through, it's easier to do. And if you have soil, it's easier to do than hilly, rocky, woodsy / open terrain, which is what we're using, which means sometimes when you go to put the quote-unquote step-in post, it does not step in because there's nothing to step into. And so what's happened over the last 5 years is that Tactical has learned where those places are. He's learned how to read what's growing in the pasture. If there's a plant with a deep tap root, that's a really good place to put a post. He's learned how to read the pasture to know, but he also just knows where the paddock lines have to be based on the terrain we have. Two different time investments for that, right? You get to make that management decision. Another management decision you're going to want to make is how much medical intervention are you going to do versus just going survival of the fittest. Now, my mindset is survival of the fittest is perhaps the best way to go. It is the best way to go to get strong genetics. And at the same time, I have a relatively small flock. There are 8 pregnant ewes. Well, there were 8 pregnant ewes. There are 6 left right now. And with a flock that small, like I don't have 500 head of sheep or even 50 head of sheep. I don't even qualify for being a sheep farmer according to Tennessee's rules until I have 50, apparently. That is harder to do when you go just rabid survival of the fittest because you're going to lose sheep to different things. Like when you're rotating them, to keep them from, re-encountering parasite load, for example, some of them sometimes would get worms. Do you treat for worms or not? That's a question, right? I've never had to treat for worms here as long as we've had the sheep, but a day could come where that happens. When they get sick, do you treat the illness? When they get injured, do you treat the illness? When they jump the fence, do you shoot the animal? Survival of the fittest means making those decisions or knowing where your line is. For me, because it's a smaller flock, when there's one that, for example, jumps the fence, the best thing you can do from a survival of the fittest approach is shoot that animal, process that animal, and the other animals. Like, you're not passing on the tendency to jump over the fence, right? So people with a lot of sheep, like Greg Judy, will do that. That's how he keeps that from getting involved. He's like, look, well, that's not a character trait I want. So boom, right? Well, when we have an animal jump the fence, they also go on the list if they can't. We'll give them retraining camp, which is 4 cattle panels and an electric wire on the inside to teach them to pull back and to respect the wire. And that thing is amped up. If that doesn't work, they do go on the processing list, which means if they're jumping a lot, we'll separate them from the flock and they will get processed. However, if they're a pregnant ewe, we'll let them give birth first and then we'll plan to raise those for meat only and not to pass on the genetics. So we do a bit of a hybrid approach here. So I'm going to tell you like decisions you can make, but also some of the decisions we've already made. And we have had one animal get a brain infection and we treated him with antibiotics and then just didn't sell his meat. We let him live for another 6 months after that, and then we processed him for our own consumption. So those are, because it's expensive to lose an animal. Like that's $500 worth of meat we lose, basically, $400 or $500 worth of meat. And if a $25 intervention can help us, and we don't pass on the genetic, I'm actually okay with that. And then other questions you may want to answer are, do you get hair sheep or wool sheep? We have hair sheep. They drop their hair. They are acclimated to really hot temperatures. They do okay in the cold too, because they have the hair in the winter and they drop it, but I don't have to shear them. I don't run into fly strike issues as a result of this. We have a lot of fly strike problems in Tennessee. Before we chose the breed of sheep here, we talked to other people and veterinarians about which sheep do best here. And we decided to go with St. Croix. They're not the only choice here. Katahdins do well here too. I think Dorpers do well here as well. So it just depends on what you want to do. But knowing what does well in your climate is really important. That's just part of it. But hair versus wool is a question. The hair sheep are more intended for meat. And I have noticed the difference in flavor with that as well. So that's important. So once you've made management decisions, you're like, Nicole, what does this have to do with birth? Hang with me. The second thing you need to do is find strong stock. And what we lucked into it. Dawn Sutton was walking by at Self-Reliance Festival needing to sell her strong stock. And we were wandering around looking for sheep. Not like we weren't there looking for sheep, but we're like, we want to add sheep. We're going to get some sheep. Maybe we'll get a Doc Berry. Maybe we'll get some from Greg Judy. Dawn's like, I'll sell you my flock. So she sold us her flock. And that had a built-in sheep mentor, which was important later when things started happening with sheep. So I think finding strong stock, you need to find the people who do the survival of the fittest method, even if you're not going to do that. If you're more prone to having bottle lambs and all of the other things, I still would think about who's passing on lineage long-term, but I would also start with strong stock from somebody who is a big survival of the fittest person, because they end up, there is a guy who does St. Croix near here he's been doing it here for 20 years. He's probably as hesitant as I am to bring a strange animal onto his farm because he does not want to, you know, pollute it. But they are very parasite resistant for this exact area. If I was going to buy one from Not Carrie, I would try to find that guy and get some from him, because that would add biodiversity, but it also bring in local traits. So as you get into raising livestock like sheep, you will find ways to do it. But when you're going in, spend time doing the research. And I know there's a lot of, like you can run blood tests for different things that they have to see if they are the kind of animal you want or not. Definitely worth doing, because you don't want to bring something onto your property that lives in the soil forever, right? So that's another thing. So with that, let's transition into lessons learned or things to think about as you get prepared to learn birthing. And I have a certain order of things and I don't like it. So I'm going to start at the very end. Some resources you may want to hit before going through a birthing season is, one, get a sheep mentor. You can find somebody who raises sheep before you even get sheep and come out and watch a birth. That's really helpful. Before we got sheep, I had been present and helped with goat births, which are similar. It's like basically the same thing, only it's a goat, not a sheep, which is good enough for that, right? But also having a sheep mentor you can call when there are problems and ask questions, it's really important. So by buying the sheep from Dawn Sutton, I was able to ask her questions along the way. And that made a huge difference, especially during birthing season, especially when we had our first bottle lamb. Like, she's like, well, congratulations, you're feeding a lamb every 2 hours. Have fun with that. Get them to every 4 hours as fast as you can. And we did. The other thing is she left, and she will eventually, when she gets back into sheep, I'm sure, take these back. Laura Lawson has written some books on how to care for lambs. And Lamb Problems is the one specific to your young ones. And other references she's written. It's just all about caring for your sheep and dealing, like, troubleshooting issues. Very helpful. Now, if you're in the middle of a hands-on emergency, the last thing you're going to do in the pasture is, like, look for the page on the book. That's more of a, if you have time. I for sure checked that resource the first time I had to pull a lamb, even though I went on instinct once I was actually pulling the lamb. And then lastly, if you have not read or listened to the series All Creatures Great and Small, do that. It talks about pulling calves and sheep and turning them inside. And it's written from a veterinarian standpoint, a country vet. And A, they're great stories, and B, it frames in story what's going on when you're assisting with births. So I think having that under your belt is super helpful because, again, when you're out in the pasture, you may have time to look at a reference. You may not. But if you do have time to look at a reference, great. And if you don't, you at least have in story like, okay, so when he was in there and it was a sideways lamb, this is what he did. When it was a backwards lamb, this is what he did. When its elbow was that way, this is so, because he talks about all that, just very, like, this is normal. This is what you have to do. When you had to push cattle, cows back in to move them, to pull them back out, right? Like all of this stuff. And I don't want you to hear that and then think, oh, this is scary. I can tell you this. The majority of the sheep born here don't need help. The 1 year that we were a little nutritionally off as far as pasture quality, we had more problems. And the other year when it was super cold because I made a mistake and timed delivery, like there was a ram left with the ewes who was young for too long. And it turned out we were having babies in the middle of the winter, which is not, now is when I want to have babies. Now is when we're having babies this year. We got that right. We learned that when you separate rams from ewes, you separate them all the way. They are not looking at each other across an electric fence. They're like, certain drives will make a lamb go through an electric fence, just saying. So you either have to have a hard fence that's like lamb knocks, or we have them a tenth of a mile apart right now. Like the boys are over there. The girls are over here. Everybody's not getting pregnant right now. Most of them are either pregnant or delivering right now, but you never know. Like I've got two who I don't want bred right now and they're over here. And when the ram was over here, those two were over at my house. So that's something that's really important. And then during birthing season, like the important part is keeping, you know, like keeping an eye on if the lambs bond with the mom, keeping an eye on the moms to see if they're maybe you've got a stuck lamb or something. And that's just observation. I just set a timer and observe on a regular schedule what's going on. Like I know at 4 p.m. it's time to check the babies that have needed some augmentation because we had an emergency a couple of days ago. And while there, look at all the other ewes and see if it looks like anybody's about to go into labor or is in labor. Often what happens, though, is we'll go 4 hours. We're on a four-hour schedule right now. We'll go 4 hours and come out, and the lambs are already born, and they're fine, and they're running around, and they're nursing, right? That's what you want to see. If you come out and you're like, whoa, the lambs are separated from the mom, you got to get them together and either put a candle panel around them in a circle to keep them near each other, or worst case scenario, you can put them in a head gate. A head gate allows the mom to stand up and sit down and eat and get water, but she can't see what's going on behind her, and then her lambs start nursing. And once they've been nursing on her for a bit, they'll smell more like her, and she'll bond with them if she hasn't already bonded with them. But again, usually they're already bonded and they're fine. So with that in mind, if you're going to have to help with a birth, you're going to need to touch gross parts. And when you touch gross parts, if you can, you want to wear gloves. Now, I know a lot of people don't wear gloves. And then I read all the diseases I can get from animals by not wearing gloves, and I wear gloves. So I have a pasture birthing bag in an SOE, who made this t-shirt, in an SOE container hanging in the barn right now. Because the barn is near where the pasture is. And then if I need it, it's over there. Luckily, it wasn't on the four-wheeler because I rolled the four-wheeler and that would have been stuck under the four-wheeler. And then I would have had to go get all the pieces parts. My birthing bag is really simple. And what I've learned lesson-wise is I don't need something with all the possible things that could go wrong in a birth situation. I need the things most likely to go wrong. And if a bigger problem happens, we can go get the things. And in this way, I have instant access to what I need. The first thing there is birthing gloves. The second thing is a lubrication. Now, one time I didn't have a lubrication because I never thought I'd have to go in. I've gone in without it. Not ideal, but there's a lot of lubrication going on at the time of birth anyway. So that was fine. Nothing tore. And then the second time I had to go in and still hadn't gotten lubrication because I'm an idiot about things sometimes. It takes me twice to learn the lesson, right? I used Vaseline because I had Vaseline. So there are other ways you can get something like that done. But I bought actual, I don't know, cow or some, I have a tube of stuff made for that that's sterile, because the other thing you want is sterility, right? So that's in the birthing bag, because if I need to do a pelvic exam or if I need to pull a lamb, extra lube is always better to get something out of that birth canal, right? But also I don't want to cause pain or damage as much as possible. And then the cool thing about the rubber gloves, which go way up your arms, you get the ones that go way up your arms, guys, not the ones. There's actual birthing gloves that'll go all the way to your shoulder. I have ones that go to my elbow because I don't need, in a lamb, I haven't had to go that far. So, and I happen to have those right now. I will eventually get the other ones too. If you're doing cows though, you're like full on up in these giant things. that's a different topic for a different show, right? I have a thermometer to be able to take temperatures of lambs or mom. And I have more than one. Right now, I just have one in my birthing bag, and I'm about to go put another one in there. And I don't think I've gone through a season where I did not have to take the temperature. So I use a method where I put my finger in the mouth of the lamb, and if it feels warm, I know that they are more than 98 degrees, which is good. And if it feels cold, I have a hypothermia problem, and I'm going to need to take this lamb and get it warmed up. But the thermometer helps me know if they have a fever, right? Because they may feel warm and might be too warm in a situation where it's acting lethargic. If it's like warm and acting lethargic, I'm like, do you have a fever? I hope not. So that's another one. And I want to know if mom has a fever, if there's been a traumatic birth. I have a mom with a fever right now who had a traumatic birth, right? She was at 104.3. And the peak you're supposed to have for sheep is 103.5 or 8. It's around there. Like the minute it went to 104, I was like, yeah, she has a fever. I got to do something else. Towels or a way to dry things off yourself, the animal, whatever it is, especially if it's a cold day when a lamb is born. And if the mom's not cleaning them off right away, and if you have that relationship with the lamb, you can towel them off and get them dry. And if there's a problem, toweling them off helps, especially if they're shaking and cold. So I find that always helpful. Also, if you have a hypothermic lamb, and the way we're set up, we don't have a warming station in the barn. There's a warming station I can set up at my house where there's electricity, because there's no electricity at the barn. I need to get that lamb back to my house and not make it colder by riding on the four-wheeler with it. And so wrapping it, like getting it dry, wrapping it in the towels, I shove them down my shirt and then I go so that they can breathe, but they're not getting hit by the wind. And they get some body warmth from me. That's like, the towels are super important. Plus, as anybody who's done anything medical ever knows, that you can never have too many towels or gauze. That's just the way it is. And then some sort of rubbing alcohol or sterilization capacity, because when you put the thermometer where you put the thermometer to take the temperature, and then you put it in another animal, you want to sterilize it in between those two things. This leads me to a funny story. So my thermometers are blue, and I got them at Tractor Supply, and they look a specific way. And apparently, because the warming station for lambs is in my bathroom, I said, and I was taking temperature of the little lamb to see if his body temperature was up to get in to milk replacer. And it has to be, they have to be over 100 degrees or 101 degrees, or else they won't digest it, and you won't help them at all by getting that in there. So I ended up leaving the thermometer in my bathroom. And then this year when I was sick, I had a fever, I thought, and I was like, hey mom, hand me the thermometer from the bathroom. And she comes out with this thermometer that looks like my livestock thermometer. And I look at that and I look at that, and I did not put it in my mouth. And I was like, mom, is there another thermometer in there? And she's like, yeah, there's this other one. And that was my actual thermometer. And so don't leave your lamb thermometer in your bathroom without Sharpie on it or something saying what it is, because that could have gone horribly wrong for somebody. It had been sterilized, but just the thought of where that thermometer's been, you know, think about how you store those things. I have a lot of extra lamb / or livestock thermometers around, because I'm often, like, I think I had that in there also when kittens were around, because we had to measure kittengers. I already have a basic first aid kit in the barn with some things that we've needed for sheep. And then we have a more in-depth one at my house that can be stored differently. So, you know, so just the birthing kit is just for birthing. It's not for, can I give, you know, am I giving a vitamin B shot or am I whatever? I don't think I've had to give a vitamin B shot since their first season here, as a matter of fact, because their rumens have become acclimated to our system here and they've been just doing really well. So I'm happy about that. Now, in addition to this pasture kit, you want to have the home support kit for a lamb. And this means, like, again, back to the intervention question. Carry goes survival of the fittest. They do not maintain bottle lambs there. If they get a bottle lamb, it's either going to die or it's going to go to somebody else. Okay. That's a decision they've made there. We've made a different decision. When we have a lamb that needs some help, we'll give them support and then sell them now, right? Or, you know, whatever. If there's a reason to keep, like, we kept Stormy so we'd have a bottle lamb that was really friendly with us to be the emissary between the flock, and that has worked really well. But I don't want bottle lambs every year. So my decision is you get a bottle lamb and it goes to somebody else, right? But to begin, sometimes they could use a little boost. And again, the ones that need a little boost, we do not keep to pass on their genetics here. But I will give them a little boost, you know, especially first couple of days, if things have gone wrong, little boost. And then they go on to get raised by their mom. They eat the grass. They turn into delicious meat. And we serve them at the spring workshop in the form of a whole roast lamb. So the things you need to have on hand are colostrum, and that's lamb colostrum if you can get it. I get it from Premier One. This year I did not order it from Premier One. I do have a package from last year, Premier One. I just have to see if I can still use that. They make a multi-species colostrum at Tractor Supply. That's what we're using right now. And to the best of our capacity, we get a lamb on the mom for the actual colostrum. But if it looks like they're not getting enough, I'll augment it. Bottles. Now, you can buy livestock bottles at the store. They work great. You have to cut a hole in the nipple, and depending on how big the hole is, when they're younger, it's smaller, and you make it bigger as they get bigger. But if you're cheap, like me, you can go to the Dollar Tree and spend $1.25 on the baby bottles there, and there's already a hole in the nipple, and it actually works perfect. The nipple shape of the livestock one's a little closer to the mom's nipple shape, but I haven't met a lamb yet who hasn't been like, oh, there's delicious milk in here. I will just use this other funny-shaped nipple. So I use those. They can be run through the dishwasher. Like, they're all sorts of cool to use. Milk replacer. So you want this all before lambing season starts. Milk replacer. Because when lambing season starts, you're going to go to the store and they're not going to have milk replacer. It's like getting your canning supplies now and not in July when you want to make pickles because you go to the store and there's no canning lids, right? So same concept here. Pee pads. This I would not buy unless I knew that I was going to have a bottle lamb to take care of. But I would buy it immediately when the bottle lamb came, just because it's so many. We bought a case of pee pads 2 years ago at Walmart that are intended for people who are, you know, like as a protection for your bed sort of thing. And when you're on hospice or something or have an issue at Sam's Club. And I am still working through that box. So I have them on hand now. Those things are super handy. I put them in dog crates. I put them in the cat carrier when I go to the veterinarian. I use them in the dog crate where I put a bottle lamb if I'm raising a bottle lamb. Margo says, frugal, not cheap. Yes, it is frugal, not cheap for the bottles. But the other thing is that they're, it's just nice to have them. So, you know, actually, maybe I would amend that. Maybe that's a good thing to have on hand if you're going to be carrying animals around a lot. Like, they're just there as an extra thing. A dog crate to put, or some way of containing an animal if you end up with a bottle baby, so that you don't have animal in your bathtub sort of situation, which we've all been there if we're homesteaders. It's like, well, we had to put the chickens in the tub or whatever, or the ducks in the tub or the goat in the tub, or, you know, you want to be able to think about how could I set this system up if I am going to end up with a bottle lamb. And like last year when our sheep were all being born on in the really, really cold, if one needed extra help and a couple of them did, they had hypothermia and other things. We took them at night from their mom overnight on the really cold nights. and then put them back in the morning when it had warmed up. And then that meant I had sheep in a dog crate in my living room with a pee pad under it. So again, that's a decision I made that other people wouldn't make and they'd end up with dead babies. But I really like to raise my meat sheep up to be able to be sold as meat and not as a baby. If you're going to have a bottle lamb, you may consider getting some diapers. I don't know what size. I've never done it. I know other people, they'll just get normal kid diapers and cut a tail hole because buying the ones with the tail hole costs more. So just get normal baby diapers if you're going to do that and figure out how to adjust it for that situation. So if you're going to have it in your house, it's actually not a bad idea to have the pants. We call them pants at my house because my dog started wearing pants at night. And I have washable pants. I might get washable pants for a lamb if I was going to do that because it's just less waste. But also, having them on hand is the key. And then anything you can do to keep that animal out of your house, just don't have them in your house if you don't have to have them in your house. Meaning, when it's nice out, they go to the pasture and hang out with all the other sheep and learn how to be a sheep. So even when you're doing a bottle lamb, if you have other sheep, they're with the other sheep. Like this one right now that we're augmenting, she's with her mom all the time. She just is not very good at nursing on her mom, and her mom doesn't have a lot of milk. But she's like getting the baths. She's getting taken care of by mom. She has her brother right there, like all of the things. That's better for her to have the care in the barn with mom than for us to take her to my house, right? Because then she learns how she's supposed to act. And that's sort of an important thing. So then you want to have a way to warm lambs if you're going to help them with hypothermia. And the way you warm a lamb is you heat water to like 101, 102 degrees in a bottle, and you can let them drink from the bottle, water only, no milk. They cannot digest until their body temperature is over 101. So, you know, maybe 103 degrees, 104 degrees, that's all in that range is okay. But if you really need to warm a lamb, you can't just warm them quickly. So what you do is you make a warming box, and people will make just an enclosed area with a heat lamp and put them on a towel and let them warm up slowly. And then every 15 minutes or so, give them access to the water until their temperature is up to time for them to be able to drink a bottle. And then you give them 104 degree milk replacer or colostrum. And then that goes in their system and they get the calories, and then the calories allow their own body to keep them warm. Okay. Because when they've gotten hypothermia, usually what has happened is they didn't get enough food and their body temperature dropped, and now they can't digest food. And so they can't use the food. So the first thing you do is get the body to, and this is important to know, get the body temperature up. But my friend Dawn said one time she didn't have anything but a hairdryer and a pair of jeans. And so she wrapped the lamb in the jeans with his little head sticking out, like up where the waist is, and then went to the leg of the jean and crumpled the other one up and like shot a hairdryer up that. And I've used that method. Like, it's a good thing she told me that. But what I actually do is I set him up in a bin with a towel, and I duct tape the hairdryer blowing at an angle, not on him. And I'm trying to keep that temperature in there at about 104 degrees. So I'm not trying to make it 120 degrees in there. So in order to keep an eye on that, I use my Yolink probes and put them in there, and I set an alert that if it goes above or below something, it yells at me, and then I just let them heat. It'll take half an hour, an hour, 2 hours sometimes to get them heated up, and that's okay. And if they die, they die. But that's me giving them a chance. So having a hairdryer or a heat lamp, a plate, a thing to put them in, temperature probes are important. Again, that's why the thermometer was in my bathroom, is I was like, are you warm yet? Are you warm yet? It was not moving at all. So I just left the are you warm there probe in for a little while until it got, when it started showing it was uncomfortable, I was like, oh, you're going to live. You know, that's one of those things. And then if you're doing a bottle baby, a sous vide is really helpful to just heat the bottle, because you'll make the milk replacer, use it, and then the next, and you make too much on purpose, and then you store it in the fridge. You pull it out of the fridge for 10 minutes or 15 minutes in the sous vide at 104 degrees, and it's heated up. So at the time, so for heating bottles, sous vide's great. If you have a baby bottle heater, that might get you there too. Mason jars are great for mixing it. They're great for if you have to put boiling water in it to heat it faster, that works really well. A thermometer. So again, you just, there's a thermometer in every kit for a sheep if it's related to medical. more gloves, but then for this situation, for the home stuff, I don't need the long elbow gloves. I just use the normal gloves. And then Lam probiotics. So right now I'm realizing that the one who got bit by a dog and got an infection who got antibiotics today needs probiotics now, because that'll kill the probiotics or in her gut, or it could impact it negatively. So I need to make sure she gets probiotics. So she's going to get that sprinkled in some Lam treats today, and hopefully we'll feel better. Like, she was feeling visibly better an hour after that happened. So hopefully that works. So that's my Lam home support kit. And then, so things to think about mentally that you want to prepare about or think about before lambing season is, what do you do with a stuck lamb? If it's stuck with just its head out, it usually means one arm's forward and one arm's back. Like, how do you get that out? Is it okay to just pull a lamb anytime? My veterinarian said it's better if while she's having a contraction, you're pulling, because then you're less likely to tear something. So that's an important piece of information. What do you do with a breech lamb? Do you just deliver it backwards? What about a sideways lamb? Sideways does not come out unless you go in there and turn it, by the way. What if it's, you know, up versus down, those sorts of things. What do you do with a cold lamb? That's the hypothermia. What do you do if one's born and it's just like, it's dopier than everybody else for a long time? I just read, and I'm going to try this. I need to learn. It's some method where you squeeze it to simulate being born, because sometimes they come out and they don't realize they've been born. And so they're just dopey, but they might be dopey because they have a genetic disorder. They might be dopey because they haven't gotten enough colostrum. They might be dopey because they got injured on the way out. They might just, you know, who knows? You want to figure out why your dopey lamb is dopey. So, yeah. So is a second hair dryer in your preps? Well, I do have two hair dryers because I have one for my hair and I have one for sheep. So yes, I would definitely have, Amy, to your point, a second way of heating. We also have heat lamps. I just find the hair dryer easier to dial in the temperature with. So that's just me. A way to deal with low milk production from mom. What has helped our moms with low milk production get going is letting the lambs nurse as much as possible, because that gets her flowing. But you can also use any herbs you would use to get your own milk flowing. If you're a woman and you have low milk production, you can augment with the lamb. I don't know if they work or not. I just know that's what people do. What do you do if a lamb comes out and it's not breathing? Is it dead? Do you give up? The answer is no. You can like shake it by its feet and that, make sure it's clear and it might still be okay. There's a whole bunch of other things to do in that situation. And sometimes, unfortunately, you do need to mentally deal with the fact the poor thing didn't make it. And then how do you deal with a prolapse in a ewe? So we've had a number of prolapses. We have one ewe somewhere that's throwing sheep that have prolapses. And we think we've got it figured out who it is. We don't actually, it's down to two. And no sheep from those two get passed on for breeding stock right now, because it's an increased chance of prolapse. Now, prolapse can happen because you overfeed your sheep, but it's also genetic. So there's a prolapse harness you can put on them and help them through the birth, and it keeps everything from inside coming out. They can have surgery. There's lots of different things to do. What we do for a prolapse is process the ewe. That's what we do. And because we know one of the two Katahdins that we have are throwing prolapses, neither, like, the only thing that ever happens with sheep that are born by the Katahdins is they get processed for meat. So that, and that's how you keep your genetics strong without just doing survival of the fittest and saying, well, one of you two is throwing prolapse animals, so we're just going to process everybody, right? So that, because they're such good mothers. They are such good mothers. So those are the things that you want to be prepared for at birthing. Pulling a lamb is dramatic and emotional. And most of the lambs I've pulled have been easy, except last year, the one that was stuck in our bottle lamb, Stormy, had such a big head, and she was just not dilated to how she needed to be dilated to deliver this. And then I had to go in there with my big fat Nicole hands and pull it out with, like, I was using one hand to hold her open and one to pull during contractions, and Tactical was pulling back on her as I, so that she would not like come forward. And I was to the point where it had been a stuck birth for a long time. I was pretty sure the lamb was dead anyway at that point. And it was to the point where I'm like, well, if I, middle of the night, by the way, of course, this stuff never happens in the middle of the day. It's always middle of the night. I was like, well, if I don't pull the lamb out, Stormy's going to die. So I just, and it's possible when I pull this lamb out that something will tear and Stormy will die, right? But her only chance at living right now is we pull this lamb. So I pulled the lamb, and when it came out, it moved. And then I shook it upside down a little bit, and it stood up, and she was like, yay, I have a lamb. And she was not torn. So that was a big thing. And that's sort of an, I share that story because it's sometimes hard when you're doing a medical intervention to be like, I have to go all the way on this. But sometimes you have to go all the way on it. It's like literally you're saving a life and you save the life and it causes pain and it's hard to do, but their pain's not your problem. Their life is. And that's the same with sheep versus people, right? So be ready for that mental moment. Have thought about what you think you can do at that point, because you know that's part of the process. Or your ewe's going to die with a stuck lamb, and you don't want that. So the good news is this rarely happens. Like literally, the reason it happened with her is that we didn't want her pregnant, but she jumped the fence and went and saw the ram. And she was younger than we wanted her to be pregnant. She's also small of stature because she's a bottle lamb, and we're just glad there weren't two lambs in there. But you know, we got through it. And so will you, if you get sheep. It sounds like a lot when I do an episode on it, but these are all little decisions you make every day when you work with livestock. And it's very gratifying to raise livestock if you are that kind of person. So anyway, I hope this helps you think about if you're going to get lambs. If you like the show and want to support the work I do here, you can do it in two ways. One, get your coffee. I'm drinking tea, but get your coffee at otherbroats.com. To consider becoming a member, head over to livingfreeintennessee.com to find out more. And don't forget, bacon class, 3 seats left, livingfreeintennessee.com, $73. You're going home with some bacon to cure. Anyway, with that, go out, make it a great week.